I'm your host, Logan Palooch, and I'm here with Chris Trimble, the producer of this podcast. Listeners, welcome back for episode 2 of Walking Alongside, a podcast about addiction, recovery, and friendship. That's right, episode 2. If you haven't already, please listen to episode 1 before continuing. In episode 1, we shared the story of how Emily Duff supported her own mother as she recovered from addiction. Along the way, we learned a great deal about how people with addiction are treated and mistreated by those around them.
You know, Logan, Emily's story was great, but it left me feeling nervous. I'd like to be able to offer support, but recovery sounds really difficult, and I know very little about it.
That's true, but it's also true that you could lend a helping hand tomorrow. It's truly not that hard. Remember, you will not be the only person involved. You can leave the expert work to the people with professional training. In fact, your role is straightforward. It amounts to walking alongside. It amounts to friendship.
The job is just to be a friend?
That's right. The job is friendship.
So the job is friendship. Well, I know how to be a friend. At least I think I do. And as I see it, one thing a friend might do is try to be a positive influence. So should I think of the job as being a life coach of sorts, guiding the person I'm supporting towards better decisions?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that question. A lot of people ask that question. But the answer is no. You are not a coach, and your role is not to give guidance.
It's not? Okay, but why not?
Because in the world of addiction and recovery, you have limited knowledge. In fact, you just said that yourself.
Yeah, you're right. I did just say that.
You are simply not in a position to tell anyone what to do or to guide anyone towards what you deem to be better choices.
Fair point. But then I'm not sure, how do I help?
Let's try a little experiment here. We're going to step away from the world of addiction and recovery, but just for a bit.
Okay, let's try it.
I want you to think of a close friend, someone you care about, someone you know to be a good person, maybe even someone you admire.
All right, I'm doing that.
Now I want you to visualize your friend's face, or even their smile.
Okay.
You ready to go on?
Ready.
Now, imagine that your friend calls you on the phone and says they've been diagnosed with a rare disease. You've never heard of it, but it sounds scary.
Okay. All right, I'm doing that.
Are you ready to go on?
I think so.
Now, imagine that your friend asks to see you.
Okay.
So, what do you do?
I mean, well, I go straight to the hospital, of course.
Right. And then what?
I mean, well, I'd talk to them.
Yes, of course. What would you talk to them about?
Well, I mean, I'd try to understand what they were experiencing. I'd ask questions. I'd ask how I could help. I'd listen. I might even just sit quietly for a while.
Say that again.
All right. I'd try to understand what they were experiencing. I'd ask questions. I'd ask how I could help. I'd listen. I might even just sit quietly for a while.
Like I said, it's a job you could definitely do.
That's it?
Well, that's not the entire job. We will have more to say in episode 3, but that is definitely the most important part.
So you're saying I don't try to provide guidance? I don't even try to give, I don't know, gentle nudges in the right direction?
Well, I notice that's not something you said that you would do for your friend with a rare disease.
Yeah, that's true.
Why not?
Well, I mean, in that case, it seemed obvious that I was in over my head. I'd have no idea what sort of guidance to provide.
Exactly.
Okay, so you're suggesting that it's the same with addiction.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Look, many people react the same way you did. That's because many people think that a person becomes addicted because they make mistakes. And if you haven't made the same mistakes, it's easy to imagine that you can give guidance.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
But if you think about it, almost everyone makes the same so-called mistake, trying alcohol or drugs. Almost everyone has done it, but only some get addicted.
All right, but then why do some get addicted while others don't?
We know that genetics plays a role. We also know that trauma, such as physical or sexual abuse, plays a role. And we know that childhood trauma is very closely tied to addiction. In fact, some studies estimate that childhood trauma accounts for 2/3 of adult addiction.
All right, so there's some big factors that are well beyond the control of the person with addiction.
For sure. And consider this. These days, many people with addiction get started not by drinking alcohol and not by using street drugs, but by taking medications that were promoted by the pharmaceutical industry and prescribed to them by their doctor.
Yeah, it sounds like you're talking about the opioid crisis.
Yep. Today's most dangerous drugs originated inside the healthcare industry.
All right, so I was at least dimly aware of what you just said about genetics, about trauma, and about opioids. But I still attributed addiction to poor choices, to mistakes.
You are hardly the first to do so. Personal choices do play some role, but personal choices also play a role in heart disease and cancer.
Interesting point.
With addiction, we know that there are much bigger forces at play than personal choices. And we know that addiction is a disease. It is a complicated disease. It's both physical and psychological, and there's a great deal that is beyond the reach of science.
So in other words, it's way beyond my personal understanding.
That's right.
So it would seem that in order to do this job well, I've got to have the right mindset.
Let's go back to the experiment. You were visiting a friend with a rare disease. Think about what you offered in that situation without any prompting at all. First, you offered respect. You knew your friend to be a good person, and you acted as such. Second, you offered humility. You didn't understand the disease, you didn't understand what your friend was experiencing, and you didn't pretend otherwise. Third, you offered empathy. You did that by asking questions, by listening, maybe even just by sitting quietly beside your friend. And that is darn near the entire job.
That's darn near the entire job?
Without question, that is the most important part of the job.
Sounds like I can do that job.
Yes, you most certainly can.
It still doesn't seem like enough, though. I feel like there must be a way that I can have a more active role. I want to be part of the solution.
But you have no expertise here, so you are not the problem solver. Also, I think you are underestimating the power of respect, humility, and empathy. You are underestimating the power of simply walking alongside. Remember, we're talking about people who the world wants to dismiss.
Yeah, like how Emily's mother was treated.
Yes. Think of your job this way. Your job is to be the friend who takes a person with addiction seriously, who can be counted on to listen, and who will always offer respect, humility, and empathy. To go just a step further, Chris, I want us to hear from one of Emily's colleagues, Carol Sarazen. Carol and Emily do similar work, coordinating care for people with addiction. And in Carol's view, to provide support, the first thing you need to understand is how the rest of the world treats a person with addiction.
You're an addict. You must be just taking this medication to get high. People who are addicts are considered dirty, homeless, bums. They don't have jobs. They're on the street every day, you know, robbing people, looking for the next fix.
And what makes it worse is that the stigma can come from very close in.
I am working with a young, beautiful lady right now who is in recovery from alcohol, and she let her children's parents know that she's in recovery. She wanted to be really, you know, upfront and to let them know that.
Carol is actually referring to her children's friends' parents here.
Okay, let me make sure I'm following. So we have a mom who's in recovery, and she feels it's important to be upfront with other moms, so she's open about the fact that she's in recovery.
Right. And I bet you can guess the result.
And now her child is not allowed to play with their children because the stigma is, oh, you're a recovering alcoholic. You're probably going to drink in front of my kids. You're probably going to screw up and be drunk driving with my children or drunk at your house with my kids. So now my kids are not allowed to play with you.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that the other parents are being protective, but that's still pretty rough to watch your children be ostracized by other kids at school.
Yes, and I'm sorry to say that it gets worse. Here is Carol describing a current patient.
Her family has basically given up on her. She's an addict. She'll always be an addict. She's a junkie. She's a thief. That's it.
In fact, addiction can tear families apart.
I've seen people not be able to see their children because the other parent has the child, and you're a junkie, you'll always be a junkie, so I don't want my child around you. I've seen grandparents go to court and try to take children from parents.
Yeah, this isn't getting any easier.
It's what people with addiction experience. It's the message they get every day.
The stigma around addiction is like, I'm a bad person. I'm dirty, I'm gross, I'm disgusting.
Every single day. And over time, stigma has an impact.
Stigma can cause depression. It can cause mental health issues. It can cause suicidal ideations. It can cause people to withdraw from life, from themselves, from others. And it can also make people relapse and sometimes die.
Okay, Logan, that was powerful.
Yes, and for a person with addiction, it really can feel like the entire world has turned its back. So to give support, you must turn towards them. Here is how Carol describes the job.
I am here in any possible way I can to support you, whether it be holding your hand, listening to you, hearing your story, walking beside you, being quiet, not saying a word.
Holding your hand, listening to you, hearing your story, walking beside you, being quiet, not saying a word.
Sounds like respect, humility, and empathy.
Yes, that's right, Chris. And that's enough for this episode, because just that much is the biggest and most important part of the job.
It sounds to me like the most important thing to remember is that the job is not to solve the problem. The job is not to fix the addiction. The job is easier than that. The job is to walk alongside.
I agree. But let me be clear, it is not an easy job. In our third and final episode, we'll have more to say about why, and we will consider four specific scenarios that our listeners may be confronted with while supporting a person with addiction.
Okay, sounds good. This podcast has been brought to you by the Dartmouth Trauma Interventions Research Center, hosted by Logan Palooch. Special thanks to Carol Sarazen and Emily Duff. Editing by Kay Jankowski, Aaron Barnett, Logan Palooch, Rebecca Butcher, Crystal Young, and Joni Cole. Script development, audio production, and music composition by Chris Trimble and Treehouse Audio Productions.